John Allen presents the Creepy Crawl Podcast. Oh, hey, creeps. Welcome back to your show, the Creepy Crawl Podcast. Why is it your show? Well, because today's episode won the vote on the Facebook group with the Dilatov Pass a close second. I'm going to do the Dilatov Pass in a very, very upcoming episode. That will be a conspiracy episode, as is this one, because today we are talking about the most underrated UFO incident of all time. That is the UFO incident, the Battle of Los Angeles. Yes, there's a movie called The Battle of Los Angeles. It's pretty shitty. I don't recommend it, but it's kind of based on this for some reason, very, very, very loosely. There's really, like, what, three good UFO movies or alien movies? You got Signs, you got the original Independence Day, Close Encounters. Maybe Alien will be up there. Other than that, they generally suck. The Battle of Los Angeles, on that note, because, you know, we're going to do the pretend fake imaginary intro today. Well, Rage Against the Machine had an album in 1999 called The Battle of Los Angeles, and it was thebomb.edu. So, from that album, today's song will be Guerrilla Radio. Because isn't that what a podcast really is? Guerrilla Radio? Woodrow and I would like to give a megaphone shout-out to everyone who's been helping the show, all of the sexy beasts. They've been doing so. They've been doing it how? Well, they go to patreon.com/creepycrawl, or they go to Venmo at jonathan-allen-154. They also follow me on Twitter at writer John Allen, no H, and they join the new Facebook group, which is where we can vote on topics. That group is facebook.com/groups/thecreepycrawlpodcast. Now, research for today's episode occurred on April 24th, and on this day in history and now, according to urbandictionary.com, it is Punch a Rapist Day, and I can get fully behind that. I realize you're hearing this past April 24th, so I hope you did indeed punch a rapist and not feel guilty about it. For next year's Punch a Rapist Day, well, use your back foot for maximum weight distribution in the punch. You'll almost certainly shatter the nose of the protruding pus rocket rapist. That's the advice I give. We don't normally advocate violence, but they're rapists, so yeah, fuck them. Well, that's all the business we have. Let's get right on to it. Volume up and eyes up. Inhibitions about ET down. And Creepy Crawl with me. So, the Battle of Los Angeles. Let's start out with a little history. Keep in mind, this is way back in fucking 1941. So, with all the Asian hate going around, obviously I know that you creeps are smart enough to understand this was like 100 years ago. So, no Asian hate, please. Don't be stupid. But, on December 7th of 1941, Pearl Harbor was viciously sneak attacked by our then enemies, the Japanese, and this essentially set off the United States' path towards World War II. By February of 1942, things like air raid sirens, searchlights, and anti-aircraft guns lined Los Angeles as well as the West Coast. That would have been Japan's port of entry if they were going to attack us on the home front. On-purpose blackouts to prevent enemy aircraft from locating our major cities were very, very common at the time. On the West Coast, inexperienced pilots and radar men had mistaken things like fishing boats, logs, even whales for Japanese warships and submarines. It was a technological and emotional clusterfuck. Radar was brand new, some debate if it even existed. But we know that it wasn't very good, that's for damn sure. Nonetheless, it's wartime, tensions are high, and they only grow higher after U.S. Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, a bit of a drama queen, warned that American cities should be prepared to accept, quote, occasional blows from enemy forces. Well, it's transparency, but definitely not something you want to hear. Not much later, on February 23rd of 1942, and this is something I didn't even really know about. They don't really teach you this in history, or maybe they do now, but they didn't back in the day. We were actually attacked on our own soil. I always thought it went Pearl Harbor, 9/11, or Oklahoma City, if you want to count that. But on February 23rd of 1942, a Japanese submarine managed to sneak its way off of the coast of Santa Barbara, California. It ended up hurling over a dozen artillery shells at an oil field and refinery. The attack had no casualties. It caused only minor damage, but it did mark the first time that the mainland United States had been bombed during World War II. Again, have y'all heard of this? Am I just losing my damn mind? The entire Western seaboard was living pretty much in this shock state of panic and fear because of this, however. This fear culminated at 2:25 a.m. on February 25th of 1942. Yes, there is synchronicity in numbers, like I always say, 2:25 on 2:25. That's 2:25 a.m. on February 25th. As the people of Los Angeles, they woke up to sirens. That in itself obviously wasn't abnormal in this age of war, as I mentioned. There were always these practice runs going, that sort of thing. Only this time, the sirens were different. They didn't send out that tone that indicated a practice run, a dry run, or a possible attack. Like the difference between a tornado watch and a tornado warning. No, this signal actually told the city of Los Angeles that an attack was imminent, if not present, at that moment. Every light in the city as a result is turned off, extinguished, again, so planes flying overhead cannot identify cities, which is pretty shitty of a strategy because you just know there's some anti-vaxxer, anti-masker type person that refuses to turn the lights off because whatever bullshit reason they have, so it ruins it for everybody kind of thing. But yeah, spotlights end up piercing the sky as bombs exploded overhead, filling the horizon with smoke and scattering debris across the city. The entire populace of LA thought that the Japanese were following up with a second Pearl Harbor, but only one thing was missing. That one thing would be the Japanese military. This was not a wartime attack at all. It was, as ufologists and thousands of witnesses that day alike agree, in fact, a visit by an observing alien aircraft. UFOs have been in the news a lot lately. I don't think people are paying attention to this, which is really strange, but they've been in the news quite a bit, not necessarily because of what's happening in the sky, but because, well, what's happening on Earth. The stuff that's going on in the sky has been going on since forever. We know that. We always get the weather balloons, swamp gas, swamp ass, whatever bullshit excuse they have. But what's going on right now is considered to be, in the ufology community, a, quote, soft disclosure, meaning the military is sort of leaking bits of info about UFOs to the public, sort of dipping their toe bits and bits at a time rather than making one huge announcement and causing panic. It sort of makes sense if you think about it. I mean, COVID happened and all of a sudden toilet paper became a commodity like gold. If you really study the timeline? What's a time lime? Would that be a watch made of citrus? The mind wanders. You know what's funny, creeps? There's this Facebook group about podcasts, true crime podcasts, and all these idiots on there. They're dissing certain podcasts, like the ones that I listen to and probably mine. Oh, there's too much banter. There's too many jokes. There's too much blah, blah, blah. Does anybody really want a podcast where you're basically just having some fucking velvet voice newscaster reading straight from Wikipedia? How boring would that be? So yeah, I argued a little bit with these idiots in the group because I wouldn't want them as listeners. They're basic and not very fun. Lack of creativity. Terrible. You know what? They're hell people is what they are. Where was I? Off on a tangent. UFO sightings have been reported at astonishing numbers since the atomic bomb was developed in the 1940s. You can probably read into that without me having to explain anything. Yet there have been no reports of actual attacks or threats to wipe out our civilization. Think about that. Why? They could easily 187 us. Well, according to many who study UFOs as a living, myself included, I'm a studier, not for a living, though. ETs, extraterrestrials, whatever, they have worked to stop us from self-annihilation. It's my belief that aliens are actually us from long ago. I mean, think about it. How else do you explain ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics that plainly show things like astronauts in their helmets, helicopters, airplanes, all that shit? I think we advanced at one point. Probably once the Ice Age came, we were like, nah, it's time to go to Florida or whatever Florida is in space, and bounced. I think we are protecting ourselves. I think when times of crisis happen, that's when the sightings occur. We'll go into that further. So, again, there are documented incidents of UFOs shutting down nuclear missile bases, which fits the theory of our galactic ancestors saving us from self-destruction. For example, in 1967, Lieutenant Robert Salas, a commanding officer at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana, reported that a hovering UFO disabled 10 missile silos on his watch. He later said it changed him forever and he saw it as an anti-nuclear war message. Pretty much the same thing happened at Vandenberg Air Force Base in 1964 when a test missile was destroyed shortly after launch. In 1982, Lieutenant Robert Jacobs came forward to describe a film he took of an unidentified flying object approaching the missile and shooting a plasma-type beam at the warhead from four different angles. Think about that, four. The warhead then perished into the ocean. After he submitted the film to his superior officers, one called him in and asked him if, quote, he and his boys were screwing around up there. The officer kept the footage and ordered Jacobs to be silent. Jacobs later spoke out because he felt unjustly treated, of course, and he was certain that they were telling us to, quote, stop messing with nuclear weapons. And these are just a few cases in the U.S. There's footage all over YouTube and so forth of similar stuff in Russia and China as well. pretty much all the mega powers that have access to nukes, atomic bombs, that sort of thing. There's UFOs hovering. They're just watching. They don't hurt us. Think about that. There's never been a case where they come and hurt us. They're just watching to make sure we don't hurt ourselves. We're being babysat, essentially. Hundreds of USOs, which is an unidentified submersible object. It's basically going to tell you that means they're ocean UFOs. They're in the sea, which freaks me out when I'm at the beach every other day thinking about that. A bunch of USOs have emerged from the waters between Santa Barbara and Santa Monica, where the Battle of Los Angeles found its roots. And it is theorized that an undersea alien base has existed there for decades. Well, if you think about it, that's the most intelligent place to have such a base. Who's going to find the damn thing? Honestly, the other day, the waves were really, really, really choppy at Treasure Island Beach. I'm talking like knock you on your ass. There was an undertow. Well, about a half mile, quarter mile out, I saw this seagull just sitting on the water, bobbing up and down with the waves. Pretty cool. And I wanted to pet him. So I navigated and swam all the way out there. And I got my hand on the bird. For like 1 second, we bonded. Then he flew away. And then I turned around and holy shit. I was exhausted. The bottom of the ocean was well, well below me. The waves were knocking me around, and the shore was way fucking far away. Mini panic attack. I had to float in the water for a while before I finally managed to swim back to sea. Probably would have drowned, but point being, I'm only a quarter mile out. I can't make it to the bottom of the ocean at that point. So yeah, these bases could easily exist in the ocean. It's more undiscovered than space at this point. So, where was I? Preston Dennett. He is the author of the book UFOs Over California and the Undersea UFO Base. And he has documented more than 50 of these USO water sightings. In fact, in the 1970s, families would head to the Point Doom Beach at night and watch the multicolored show for entertainment. This is actually true. And there was some footage that somehow vanished when one of the homes was robbed. Well, that's coincidental. They didn't take any money, but they just took the film. Okie dokie. Little on the nose, eh? Recently, Fox News and CNN and all the other places published reports of the government acknowledging a series of UFO sightings by our own F-16s. This is a story, again, no one seemed to pay attention to, which befuddles me. In recent years, the U.S. Navy changed guidelines for how their pilots can report these close encounters without fear of reprisal. This came after the New York Times article that is now famous in ufology. I think it was about 2 years ago. They admitted to numerous sightings of tic-tac-shaped UFOs around the USS Nimitz, which is south of San Diego. A spokesman for naval operations admitted that there has been an overall uptick of interaction with aerial phenomenon, quote-unquote, since 2014. Again, creeps, Google this. Just Google UFOs, and when you go to Google, select the news option, you're going to see a shit ton of stories as recently as a few weeks ago about UFOs that nobody seems to pay attention to. It just boggles the mind. Such disclosure would change religion. It would change the way the world operates. It would change going to war, just everything we know. But no, we are too obsessed with keeping up with the Kardashians. But yeah, slowly but surely, someone is grabbing our toe and dipping it into this disclosure pool. But there was no soft disclosure regarding UFOs during World War II. This is one of the busiest UFO sighting periods in history. Thousands were smacked in their collective face with the truth, and none more so than the famous Battle of Los Angeles. I'm going to take a sip of water, BRB, to tell you how it went down. You know, creeps, I feel like everything has been done in life. I feel like there's no originality. Every invention has been invented. We even have doppelgangers. Nothing's original. So sometimes I want to be the only person in the history of the world ever to have done something. So I create random sentences, so I'll be the only person who ever said that thing in the universe ever. Such as, the greasy karate bear punched a Canadian Mountie and yelled YOLO while rubbing mayonnaise on himself in a counterclockwise position. See, no one is ever going to say those words. It's not going to come up. I will go down in history as the only person who's ever said that. Yeah, I'm pretty weird. Do not repeat that sentence, creeps, because it's mine. Get off of my lawn there. 2 days after the Japanese oil refinery attack, and just a few months after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, a giant ship appeared over the LA skies. The first thought, of course, would be some wartime attack, because, again, UFOs at that time were the things of books from H.G. Wells. They were the things of comics. Generally, UFOs were not in the vernacular. Roswell, that's a good, 7 years away. So everybody thinks they're under attack because nobody's really heard about UFOs at this point. In the early morning hours of February 25th of 1942, our debatable rudimentary radar picked up a large craft 120 miles off of the coast of LA. It just appears out of nowhere. Boom, it's just there. Kind of like a herpes sore. Well, how does it just end up there? Remapping everything, there's only one way this could have happened. It had to have dropped out of the night sky, initially from a steep angle out over the Pacific Ocean on this curving southeast trajectory. It had to have. That's the only way any of it would make sense. The object's very real, mind you. So this is how this object begins its path. Well, it should be noted, we don't have this technology. We didn't then. Pretty sure we don't have it now. The maneuver itself is impossible for human technology. And this, again, is the only logical path or trajectory. This giant vessel of unknown origin, it did all this with protective detection devices on, and it also had traceable lower altitude levels off. Again, way advanced technology. This stuff still evades us today. The object continued on a path east towards the city of Los Angeles, Angeles at an ultra high speed. So it's just like pew, 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 super duper fast, right? And it's inches above the ocean, barely skimming the water just above the surface. But as it's going at this incredibly unattainable human-made speed, about 50 miles out, it defies once again science and reduces its speed to a mere crawl. Then it turns inward inland somewhere near Point Doom. If you're familiar at all with LA County or you live in Los Angeles, the directions I'm about to give regarding the path taken might make sense. Others, you might want to Google the internet. Yep, Google the internet. That's what you're going to do. Google the internet. Get a map of LA. I'm going to give the directions of this thing. If you don't want to do that, just skip about a minute and a half. But essentially, this thing comes from the ocean, it comes inland, it tours the city a little bit, and then it goes back out to the ocean. It's pretty creepy. So scattered eyewitness accounts pick up this giant object, dropping down into the radar shadow by cruising the mostly unpopulated ridgeline, which runs across the north side of the Santa Monica Mountains, going in an easterly direction. And by easterly, I don't mean bunny rabbits and Cadbury eggs and those terrible, terrible peeps. I mean east. It then turns south in the gap in the mountains around Sepulveda Boulevard and Mulholland before coming in behind the aim direction where all the guns are facing the ocean, all the anti-aircraft stuff, which is pretty ballsy. So essentially where these guns and devices and spotlights are pointed, the vessel is already deeper inland, and then it cruises quietly in from behind, overhead these guns and the people manning them, and onward to the sea. This causes the air raid warning system regional controller, who's still pretty jittery, maybe a bit of a drama queen. He's like, well, we got attacked in the oil refinery. I don't know what this fucking thing is. So he sends the entire area into green alert, which means ready to fire. At 2:15 a.m., the controller then orders the whole warning system into operation for the first time in the war, with an area-wide blackout that affects the region from L.A. to Mexico, as far inland as the San Joaquin Valley. Well, again, I'll tell you, in a world of anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers, you know some douchebag thought his rights were being trampled on. So instead of turning off the lights so the enemy cannot tell where they are, you know, some fucking supposed patriot was just turning his lights on, being an asshole. You just know it. So, from the San Joaquin Valley, in a continuing, steeply angled climb out of the Santa Monica Mountains, the strange airship, it curves slightly to the east, both around and high above the 511-foot altitude of Baldwin Hills, which is known as Black Hollywood. It's sort of where all the African-American celebrities, it's like Millionaire's Row for African-American celebrities out in L.A. And I don't know if it was at the time, but yeah. So now it's in Baldwin Hills. Everyone who's seen this says, well, this is intelligent piloting. It just, it's not something that's floating. It's making intelligent decisions because it decides to stay away from all of the potential American fighter aircraft and weaponry, which is in Minesfield. Minesfield is now LAX. The object then turns west towards the ocean, coming out over the aircraft manufacturing plants near the El Segundo tank farm, drops altitude south along the coast. As the unidentified target continues its path, it approaches LA. Untold numbers of citizens and military alike are witnessing this path in real time because it's moving slowly, just hovering through the air, silent and ominous. Oh, and no wings. What flies with no wings? I guess a bird could if it had no wings and, you know, you put it into a cannonball. I hope people don't do that. Don't take that as an idea. Don't do that to anything living. Then finally it arrives just off the coast. For 58 minutes, this unidentifiable aircraft sits eerily calm and quiet in the sky above. The military, naturally, as well as citizens, they decided to go all 35-year-old woman in 2021 at an NSYNC concert, and they freaked the fuck out. Around 3 a.m., a number of spotlights and a barrage of gunfire zeroed in on this non-invasive, non-threatening, but definitely scary object in the sky. All this gunfire. And what this object does, it no-sells the gimmick. Rewind. Sorry, I just broke out into some carny speak as we dub it. No-selling the gimmick back in my regional professional wrestling days. That means, say a wrestler body slams you or throws punches or stomps, you're supposed to sell it, like, I'm really in pain, etc. But it doesn't, no selling would be no reaction whatsoever, which would ruin the match and get you fired. So this thing no sells this, it's like nothing's happening. It doesn't move, it doesn't flinch, it doesn't evade, and it does not fire back. I'm pretty sure if Japanese aircraft was here to seek and destroy, they'd fire back. They wouldn't just hover in the sky. This huge mass of, I don't know what you want to call it, unman-made bulk just sitting in the sky, this vessel. It does nothing. It's really crazy. And that's, I think, you know, the typical human reaction to something that could harm you like a million times but doesn't. It's the human reaction. You know what? You present no threat. So like a dickless ivory hunter or something, I'm just going to blast away. The photos, and check my and Facebook group, Creeps, reveal something creepy just floating there. Gunfire trained in right on it, just floating, no reaction, no sell, for 58 minutes. I should note that nothing this heavy in the sky, moving this slowly, can stay airborne. It's not within the laws of physics, so keep that in mind. This is witnessed by, oh, I don't know, an entire city. Not some village, mind you, but Los fucking damn Angeles. And then, as if nothing had happened, after a hellstorm of bullets and chaos, this UFO lingers off and vanishes from sight and radar. The Japanese, of course, denied having anything to do with the event. They owned up to Pearl Harbor, they owned up to the oil refinery attempt. But this had them scratching their heads. No, it didn't happen. They had nothing to lose or gain by saying anything. But later, intel and intel of their private records, nothing. They are not and were not responsible for whatever was in Los Angeles that night. Quote, powerful searchlights from countless stations stabbed the sky with brilliant probing fingers, the LA Times wrote at the time, while anti-aircraft batteries dotted the heavens with beautiful, if sinister, orange bursts of shrapnel. I tell you, Woodrow, this old-timey reporter who I imagine has his waistline up to his chest, because that's how I think of everybody in the 1940s, obviously was a poetry major who finally had to get a job, it appears. Quite a flowery presentation of the events. The U.S. military fired over 1,440 anti-aircraft shells on this mysterious ship, as well as an untold number of bullets from native Angelenos who were firing their own pistols, revolvers, and rifles into the sky at this object. It's quite odd to this day. People are still questioning why no U.S. planes were ordered into the skies to apprehend this object upon approach, because they had fair warning, especially given the local availabilities of such fighter jets in wartime. In a military article published in 1987, an official was quoted with the following quote is, "Planes of the 4th Interceptor Command were, in fact, warming up on the runways, waiting for orders to go up and interview the unknown intruders." Interview them. That would have been interesting. Why, everyone was asking, were they not ordered to go into action during the 51-minute period between the first air raid alert at 2:25 a.m. and the first artillery firing at 3:16? Air raid, bitches. That's a little dazed and confused reference there. That is something to think about. Why did these jets not go up into the sky? Well, I'm going to finish packing my bag for the beach. It's going to take me a few minutes, but in podcast time, you won't even notice. So, again, BRB. WXYZ's planes didn't go up in the sky to interview the unknown intruders. Speculation runs rampant, but some theories state that the military aircraft simply became inoperable during this 58-minute barrage, like a force field almost. Seems like the plot of a Hollywood movie. Yeah, a lot of Hollywood pulled from this event, and I'll mention that later. The ship seemed to merely exist in the sky as if to show its presence, let it be known that it's there, but not actually spank us. Sort of like when Dad gets home and Dad's nice, so he just gives you this towering, mean look, and, you know, not to fuck with Mom anymore, that kind of thing. At 3:06 a.m., for reasons unclear, at least four Santa Monica area anti-aircraft batteries turned inland away from the object and started firing out over nothing, really, over the city and Baldwin Hills, and suddenly, quote, the air over L.A. erupted like a volcano. It's, well, some people think the UFO flew in that direction and the guns followed. But what they're saying is that these guns couldn't have really turned in such a direction. So the conspiracy theory is these guns were forced by an unseen hand to fire into that direction, into the air, away from where it could harm people. It probably annoyed the ship getting like all these bullets just thrown at it. At some point, if you poke the Pope, like, nonstop, or Gandhi or somebody, or Buddha, they're going to push back, you know? But what we have is we have these jets that are our side. They don't operate while this object's in the sky. And then, without reason, all of the guns are forced into another direction. That's pretty fucking cray-cray. Whatever it was, or whatever they were, again, they no-sold. No bombs dropped, no retaliatory bullets fired, no destruction caused by the passive invader, no retaliation, no dodging, nothing. Despite the fact that almost 1,500 rounds of anti-aircraft ammo had been fired. And let me tell you, anti-aircraft, one of those bullets would leave a human just a cesspool of organs and unidentifiable body parts. But yes, despite that fact, whatever was up there was literally bulletproof to the onslaught. Sort of like Independence Day, bringing up another movie. We're throwing nukes and missiles at this thing. It's almost like a force field. This goes on forever, scaring the shit out of everybody and frustrating them. They're trained shooters. They're pinpointed. And this object's not even swaying. If this was, oh, I don't know, a weather balloon or anything of the sort, it would have been blown to smithereens, but there was nothing. This thing vanishes. It gets off radar as if it never existed after about an hour. There's not a scant trace of evidence that the ship ever existed. There's no debris. There's no anything off the ship. The side view mirror didn't come off in the event. Nothing. All of this happened, and there's no evidence that it did, except for a very famous photo in a newspaper, and the eyes of thousands of soldiers, citizens, and of course, our questionable radar that captured the behemoth. When the shore batteries and searchlights were lighting up the night sky, residents along that 40-mile stretch of coastline from a little bit north of Malibu to south of Palos Verdes, they had these prime row front seats to all of the action. One of these residents, who has since gone on to do intensive academic research into the mythological dimensions of the UFO phenomenon, was a then young boy who grew up to be an honored professor at Occidental College. His name is C. Scott Littleton. He is a professor of anthropology, again, at Occidental College. That's kind of like my college. I went to Accidental College. I unintentionally joined a fraternity. What a very homoerotic experience that was, what with the bare asses and the paddles and such. Oh, I should move on. C. Scott Littleton, the professor, this Littleton was a little man at the time, lived along the coast in Hermosa Beach. He recalled the events that transpired that night by writing, quote, "I was an eyewitness to the events of that unforgettable February morning in February of 1942. I was 8 years old at the time, and my parents lived at 2500 Strand in Hermosa Beach, right on the beach. We thus had a grandstand seat. While my father went about his air raid warden duties, my late mother and I watched the glowing object, which was caught in the glare of searchlights from both Palos Verdes and Malibu / Pacific Palisades, and surrounded by the puffs of ineffectual anti-aircraft fire as it slowly flew across the ocean from northwest to southeast." Boy, this kid had a lot of recall. I'm gonna take a break here to break up his long-ass quote. Boom, 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 boom. Okay. It headed inland over Redondo Beach, a couple of miles to the south of our vantage point, and eventually disappeared over the eastern end of the Palos Verdes Hills, what's today called Rancho Palos Verdes. The whole incident lasted, at least from our perspective, about a half an hour, though we did not time it. Like other kids in the neighborhood, I spent the next morning picking up pieces of shrapnel on the beach. Indeed, it's a wonder more people were not injured by the stuff, as we were far from the only folks standing outside watching the action. Well, this Talkerbee professor, he got into a good profession, I reckon, continues his quote, "In any case, I don't recall seeing any truly discernible configuration, just a small, glowing, slight lozenge-shaped blob light. A single blob. We only saw one object, not several, as some witnesses later reported. At the time, we were convinced that it was a, quote, Jap reconnaissance plane. That's how they spoke back then. I know it's racist. I'm just reading verbatim this guy's quote. And that LA might be due for a major air raid in the near future. Remember, this was less than 3 months after Pearl Harbor, but of course, that never happened. Later on, we all expected them, that is, the military, to tell us what was really up there after the war. But that never happened either. And that's true, creeps. LA witnessed a UFO. And again, in Carney speak, they fucking no-sold it. More on that later. Now, Littleton, again, respected academic, continues about his close encounter, which was shared by hundreds, if not thousands, of neighbors. Quote, even though the object basically came straight on and crossed directly over the top of us, being out of the range of the searchlights, its actual shape was hard to discern against the upper night sky. My dad, who in 1929 had actually watched the Graf Zeppelin land in Los Angeles at LAX, and even walked alongside and under the giant airship, often said that the object that passed over us that night was as big, if not bigger, than a Zeppelin. Well, duh! You know what? To add to this whole Zeppelin comparison, this story should have been bigger in our zeitgeist than Led Zeppelin was in music. But it wasn't. Explanations? Anybody? I don't know. I do know one thing. It's enough to make you drink. Like, I don't know. I kind of... A story like that sort of makes you want to drink some red, red wine or something. Well, creeps, you know what? I think it's time for the Woodrow Comedy Minute that lasts longer than a minute. I was showing Woodrow some old VHS tapes of Def Comedy Jam last night, so I guess he works blue now. So, as a result, today's jokes are a bit racy and definitely adult only. That's right, Adult Swim. No kids allowed in the pool. We get 15 minutes to ourselves. Woodsy, you had better not get us in trouble with this shit. What are you talking about? When have you ever got us in trouble? That's all you do. Oh, example? Sorry, folks. Okay, where do I even start? How about the time we got drunk on Natty Light and Goldschlager and tried to milk the butter cow sculpture at the West Virginia State Fair in 95? Yeah, those 4-H kids will never look at toast the same again. Stop. Stop calling me that. Creeps, Woodrow keeps calling me a used COVID test Q-tip. I don't know. That's rude. Okay, well, let's get to it. Joke number one. My penis was in the Guinness Book of World Records. Dot, dot, dot. But then the librarian told me to slide it out. Ouch. Imagine the paper cut, Woodrow. Yikes. Okay. Raunchy joke too, I guess, from Woodrow, who's working blue now. How do you find a blind man at a nude beach? It isn't hard. Ooh, nice. I get it. Because he can't get aroused if he can't. Okay, moving on. Last one. What did the banana say to the vibrator? Why are you shaking? She's gonna eat me. Well, creeps. That's our Woodrow. Now, let's get back to the show. Yeah, I know it's lame that people of certain job descriptions, they hold better credence with such stories. It's bullshit, but since that's the case, that's why I'm going to continue quoting this professor. But what's the fucking difference? If a ditch digger sees a UFO, or the president of a ceiling fan Global United Plus, I'm definitely not looking at the ceiling fan right now, if they both come out with the same conclusion, who's the media going to go to, right? So since Littleton is this big shot in academia, very well respected, I'm going to continue his quote. On the night of the flyover between from where I stood in the dirt valley behind my house and the oil wells, I had a perfectly clear and unobstructed view of the back of the object. So said, people often want to know if the rear of the craft had any exhaust ports or rocket-like thrust openings. The answer is no, at least none that I remember. However, my dad said when he tried to catch it, that's smart dad, try to catch that gigantic UFO, coming almost a broadside, although well below and somewhat behind, he could see what looked like three distinct, possibly four, narrow red-orange slit-like openings on the side toward the back, describing them as, quote, looking like shark gills only glowing. I saw nothing like that. Matter of fact, I am not sure what the motive power for the object was. I do know, even though its size was likened to a Zeppelin, it didn't act like one. Zeppelins are lighter than air machines, and there is a certain physical and psychological buoyancy to them. What the fuck is a psychological buoyancy? Whatever. Both in reality and perception, this object seemed more like a battleship. There was something heavy about it. The thing is that it made absolutely no sound. Totally silent, which is odd because almost everything I ever saw that moved and was that big, locomotives, airplanes, ships, all made lots of noise. The only other thing that stood out about the object was that it left a very slight but distinct odor trailing off behind it. If any of you have ever owned an electric train like a Lionel, for example, and noticed the smell the transformer gives off during a lengthy period of use, after the object passed overhead, in its wake, the air reeked with an odor very similar to that same smell. For me, however, what I remember the most, even to this day, was how sad the thing seemed. It was like a lost baby elephant just searching for its mommy, and everywhere it went, it got chased away or shot at. Well, my damn creeps, that's the saddest damn description I've ever heard. A lost baby elephant trying to find mama and being shot at. Makes you wonder if it was sort of part of some mothership and just trying to do a good deed and, hey, look what we do as humans, because we're idiots. Very sad line. Hundreds of other people would give this same account, creeps. Many with tales of the ship having triangular points and a stealth, soundless travel capability, although remaining too heavy to be in the sky at such a slow speed, which is spookily similar to another UFO I covered on the show, The Phoenix Lights in 1997. I'm telling you, creeps, these episodes, they just are synchronized somehow. I don't know how, I don't know why, but it keeps happening. And it's both crazy, sexy, cool, and a little bit frightening. Also on this night, Albert Nozaki was helping guard a friend's field from vandals that had been ruining crops. Because in the 1940s, see, kiddos, there's not a lot to do if you're a teenager. You probably couldn't even TP a house then because it was the war, so I'm sure everybody bought up all the toilet paper. So what they did for fun is they went and ruined carrots, I guess. Pretty edgy, these teens. Albert Nozaki described what he saw that night in the early morning hours. This is not going to be a super long quote. Albert Nozaki actually is more than just a crop guard. So yeah, we'll get that'll make sense in about 30 seconds. Quote, approaching well above the fields from the west, silhouetted against the slightly lighter night sky, was a fairly huge, dark, airborne object coming straight toward me at a fairly quick pace. At first, it seemed as though it would take a path off to the right of where I was standing. But before it reached me, it just barely began turning flatly toward the south, almost as if in a controlled drift. By then, I was just under the edge of the object as it went over me, with the center off to my left, continuing its turn and eventually disappearing in the southern night sky, while all the time gaining altitude. It was huge, dark, very long, and wide, with no lights or signs of windows. Although it did not have protruding wings like an airplane, the object's outside edges ominously curved down as well. Other than a feeling of a slight vibrational hum in my chest as it passed over, the object made no sound. So the only sound it made was an occasional droning metallic hum. Well, does that sound familiar, creeps? It might. Because Albert Nozaki later went on to be an Oscar-nominated art director, apparently drawing upon his experiences in the field that night in 1942, he designed the terrifying Martian flying machine seen in the 1953 movie War of the Worlds. Very similar. Actually, the same ship was featured in the Tom Cruise remake. In a one-on-one interview, well, that's a stupid sentence. Aren't all interviews one-on-one? Nozaki said he incorporated the ominous-like aspects of the object he saw, such as that curving down contour, into the War of the Worlds craft that he created for the film. He wanted to capture some of the fear he felt as that real-life dark object came slowly towards him. It felt to him as though he was going to be clutched up by it. Basically, what that means, those insect-like tripod type of UFOs with the droning and the scooping up of people and all that, that stems from the Battle of Los Angeles. This is art imitating life. I think that's amazing, and can you ever watch War of the Worlds again now without thinking about the UFO origins from the movie? It's based on real life. The obvious thought was that these were Japanese bombers come to attack the United States, said UFO expert Bill Burns, who publishes UFO magazine. But it wasn't. They were flying too high. And the astounding thing was, not one artillery shell could hit the craft. Out of all of the hundreds of shells that were fired, not one could hit the craft. People outside that night swore that it was neither a plane nor a balloon. It was a UFO. It floated, it glided. And to this day, nobody can explain what the craft was, why our anti-aircraft guns couldn't hit it. It's a mystery that's never been resolved. Well, Mr. Publisher Bill Burns of UFO Magazine, you are correct. They did try to explain away, though. And boy, was that just a folly of errors. Let's chat about that, shall we? But first, a word from our sponsor. Thank you. Hey, creeps. Little secret here. You actually are not what you eat. Hell no. What you are is the gear that you wear. T-shirts, hoodies, hats, you name it. Your gear determines your year. Bad gear is a year like 2019 with the COVID and all that. Fresh gear is a good year. Like when you turn 21 and legally could drink a six-pack while having a six-pack. Synopsis? Get the best gear. Hey, psst. I have an N. For my own gear and merch for my creeps, I know a guy. When I first met AJ, way back in the day, we had beepers. Now, we have the space age technology, and that's how you can find the flyest gear from the artiste AJ himself. He is the mastermind behind Drew Boogies. That's DrewBoogies. And you can find him on Instagram. No, seriously, creeps. Go to Instagram and go to Drew Boogies, DrewBoogies, and check it out. From kicks to shorts to whatever you need, Drew Boogies has the streets talking. The freshest, dopest attire is available online from Drew Boogies. This is the highest quality, the raddest design, and you'll be supporting a minority-owned business in the process. So, what are we going to do? We are going to creepy crawl on over to Drew Boogies on Instagram, and we are going to wear art, not logos, because this is your year, my dears. Ah, the fallout. So what was the fallout? What did people make of this strange event come daylight? Remember, creeps, Roswell didn't happen until 1947. If anyone had a concept of UFOs, it would have been from comic book readers and their Martian tales, or it would have been from H.G. Wells' War of the World books, not the movies, which hadn't come out yet. What wretched afterbirth would these officials make up like they normally do? Well, General George C. Marshall, in his memo to President Roosevelt, wrote that the, quote, unidentified airplanes traveled at speeds ranging from very slow to as much as 200 miles per hour and from elevations of 9,000 to 18,000 feet. This proved to be both unsatisfactory and non-scientific as an answer. We didn't have the capability to change these altitudes and speeds on the drop of a dime. We just didn't. At first, officials offered a very vague explanation, shocking. According to the LA Times, on February 26th of 1942, the Secretary of the Navy, Frank Knox, just dismisses the event as, quote, a false alarm due to, quote, jittery nerves. But when this bullshit failed to satisfy the press and the public, the Army, another branch of the military, they come out with their own thing, and they respond with a definitive answer that the craft and the battle were real. And the next day, Secretary of War Henry L. Stimson confirmed this. So first, the Navy says, nah, nothing at all. But then, the Army comes out and says, no, it was a battle. Well, the Japanese had an indestructible airship, I just want to get their story right, that didn't move or get damaged, nor did it even attack us or fire back. They built this incredible piece of technology to just come and sit there. Does that make sense? No, it doesn't make sense. It's some bullshit. But, I don't know. A lot of people bought that erratic and dodgy answer. Santa Monica's U.S. representative, Leland Ford, was quoted in the L.A. Times on February 27th, calling for a congressional investigation into the incident. But you know where this went, creeps? It went to the same city where my love life resides, and that would be the town of nowhere. The Japanese were proven, again, to not have been in the vicinity. We knew that then. We had the recon on that. So what the hell happened? People wanted answers. The Navy then declared the entire matter a false alarm. Jittery nerves. They doubled down on that, I guess you could say. Which, I don't know. A day later then, after they declare this, the War Department, they kind of side with the Army. There's no cooperation. They don't know what to do. They claim that at least one and possibly five unidentified aircraft were over the city that night. The Army did. The Navy says nothing happened at all. Okay. Seriously, what in the Three Stooges kind of fuckery excuse writing is this? Then they all just sort of stopped talking about it and let it die. And that's how it remained. Can you imagine that today? A gigantic UFO appears out of nowhere. Can't be bothered, can't be touched. It's like our artillery shells or Nerf guns. And they just figure, let's stop talking about it, it'll go away. In the years since, various explanations have been offered, from Japanese planes to German craft launched from these secret Mexican bases, to unidentified aircraft, to weather balloons, to Skylanders, to blimps, the whole array. Anything but a UFO. Again with the fucking weather balloons. Get a new shtick for fuck's sakes. I'm gonna tell you, government, no one uses weather balloons. Not enough to get... Not enough... Okay, what does a weather balloon do? It checks the weather for a meteorologist? Does this happen enough that you can use this as an excuse to cover up every UFO sighting? And how did that weather balloon, if that's what it was, not get shot to hell? When you see the picture... We had whatever this object was, dead to rights. A weather balloon. You give me, what is it? Yeah. Give me. There we go. What I just did, creeps, is I put the weather balloon apologist on my list to get punched. So, that's going to happen. And, of course, not a single trace of anything being shot down was recovered. Not one iota. Nothing attacked us, but something was there. Were there casualties? Sure. Five, in fact. They were all related to the Battle of Los Angeles, but it's not what you think. Two people died of heart attacks because they thought the world was ending, and three people died from car crashes during the chaos because, I don't know, there's a gaggle of bullets just flying around everywhere. But, in summation, everybody saw a floating cloud Titanic and could not fake an iceberg to explain it. There's another story that says that General Marshall and the Army had recovered an unidentified aircraft off of the California coast that indicated that the mystery airplanes, quote, are in fact not earthly, and according to secret intelligence sources, they are in all probability of interplanetary origin. That's sort of a nice theory, but when I do these conspiracy episodes, I seek the truth. Radar dictates otherwise from what that theory says. But the whole thing, man, it's just, this case is just a strange burrito with the most random ingredients. It's like, have a burrito. Here's a corkscrew, some guac, and a heaping spoonful of ass soup. Again, what was this event? In terms of the extraterrestrial, was it just a sighting? Or could it have been something else? A scouting mission? Reconnaissance for a coming invasion? Most people not glued to the official word like sheep laugh at the pathetic government final conclusion. This exists now. Their final conclusion years later. The whole thing, regardless of the thousands of witnesses and photograph, it was just panic due to wartime jitters. Yep, panic due to wartime jitters in California for a war raging in Europe. Creeps, they really do think that we're morons. Mass hysteria, weather balloons. These are all cryptonyms for close fucking encounter. Also, I have a word of the day app. Cryptonym was today's word. My belief, and also the same belief of many in the ufology community, is that they, again, were observing to make sure we did not destroy ourselves, as they've done for centuries. The UFO sightings over these nuclear plants are not coincidental. The Tic Tac sightings that follow these aircraft in modern times armed with crazy weapons are not happenstance. The sightings over war battles that go back to the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, it's not coincidence. We don't know what might have been happening under the darkness that night. Perhaps we were secretly on the precipice of doing something stupid in retaliation for Pearl Harbor. Maybe we had nukes lined up. Or maybe the Japanese were lurking in the sea with a hydrogen bomb. These are real possibilities for the time, and I think that maybe this higher intelligence was there to watch over us because we need to be babysat so we don't harm ourselves. I think that is what this history mystery was. History mystery. Did I just rhyme? Well, I can do better. Jack and Jill went up a hill to have a little fun. But Jill forgot to take the pill, and now they have a son. Sorry about that. It's without a doubt that aliens are correct about having to babysit us. Spurred by this strange event, on March 2nd, the military generals, a bunch of turkey tits in their little uniforms, had issued a public proclamation that divided California, Washington, Oregon, and Arizona into two military zones. And guess what? One of those zones would be a restricted zone from which all people of Japanese ancestry would soon be banned. So, we're fighting a war against the Nazis and we are doing what they are doing. Of course, it doesn't compare to the Holocaust, but nonetheless, do we want to compare it all? These are not comparisons that we should have. By the end of the war, nearly 120,000 people, most of them Asian American citizens, had been forcibly removed to internment camps. The last of these camps didn't even close until March of 1946. As we know, if you read the news or follow anything or have a pulse, Asian American racism plagues us still and seems to be on the uptick for some reason, thanks to pocketfuls of dentally and mentally challenged twinkle toes McFuckers, these people that are so buck-toothed that they could eat an apple through a fence. But in the 1940s, under a gigantic UFO, which could have changed the world, could have saved the world, could have given us answers, could have given us technologies had we been friendly, It could have changed the way we view religion, education, everything. Humanity was instead lost. We had concrete evidence of something otherworldly. It was overwhelming. What did we do with all this? We put people in fucking cages. Give me the list, Woodrow. I'm sorry, creeps. I just had to put the human race on my list. Those aliens are probably not going to come back for a while. They probably looked at this situation like, holy fuck. Are these people... Are they plankton? I mean, what is their intelligence level? We had a UFO in our grasp, saving us from ourselves. And what came out of it was putting Asian Americans in camps. I can't comprehend it. It's like fucking chemistry class once again from my sophomore year. Well, the thing is, around this time, unexplained aerial phenomena also was happening in Japan. That didn't come out till a long time later. So, the Battle of Los Angeles, we were being watched, in my opinion. And in Japan, sort of the same thing was happening at the same time. But, what is the Battle of Los Angeles? It became merely a footnote for decades until the people that were there began aging out and started to speak loud enough. Now, it appears it's seemingly a part of that aforementioned soft disclosure that the powers that be seem to think we need because we're so fragile. But they might be right. Again, look at our response afterwards. In any event, I believe our grandchildren will look at the Battle of Los Angeles as the beginning of a time when us ancient types had no official confirmation of extraterrestrial life, like they hopefully will, and which will be common to them, hopefully. Much like kids with iPhones today who cannot imagine life without such a luxury, the pre-disclosure era one day is going to be considered a relic. The stupidity, naivete, and racism that came from the event will be scoffed at, and it should. We had, again, a close encounter, and even found a way to ruin that. Normally I say FTG, Woodrow, fuck that guy. But I think, what do you think? FTU? Yeah, FTU. Fuck that us. That doesn't have much of a nice flow to it. F you? Fuck us? No, FU means fuck you. Let's just not do an acronym. Let's just say that we are, as a human race, a bunch of simpletons that need to be babysat by a higher power, because we can't handle any goddamn thing. Well, creeps, we have concluded yet another story, nay, step, that leads towards full disclosure on the alien topic. Fucking weather balloons. What a bunch of twaffles. That's right, twaffles. It's a twat waffle for those who like to abbreviate, because saying twat waffle is too long and takes up too much time. Twat waffle should be twaffle. Every time I say twat waffle, I'm wasting time like a real twat waffle would. As always, big, big megaphone shout out to the sexy beasts out there who have been helping the show. You know what? Be like them. Do it. Go to patreon.com/creepycrawl. See if I care. Go to Venmo at Jonathan-Allen-154. It won't bother me. You know what? Follow me on the Bluebird, where I put all the pictures and all this cool stuff, on my handle at writerjohnallen, no H. It's no shirt off my back. Fuck it. You know what? I dare you even. Just go to facebook.com/groups/thecreepycrawlpodcast. Bring it. The imaginary fake pretend outro music, since I couldn't find a good one about UFOs, is a song by late 90s boy band LFO. That song is Girl on TV, which was written about the crush that the singer had on Jennifer Love Hewitt. Boy, who didn't have a crush on her, or doesn't? Hashtag queen, I bow to you, J-Love. You have always been perfection. Men and women alike adore you. Gay, straight, bi, undecided, undeclared, asexual. Everybody loves some J-Love. Jennifer Love Hewitt. You are that girl on TV. Well, creeps, until next time, to quote the late great American Top 40 radio host, Casey Kasem, rest in peace, by the way, long distance requests and dedications, I leave you with a bit of his signature line that kind of sounds UFO-ish. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Oh, and Creepy Crawl on.